I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, war in the White House. Ukraine says that Russia launched a powerful missile that escalates tension in the region. How President Biden is responding. Controversial order. The International Criminal Court issues an arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Nation's capital. Analysis of the new Department of Government Efficiency with Mene Ukaburua of the Wall Street Journal. Plus, this never gets old. Why Pope Francis is calling for a profound renewal and embrace of church history. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of the presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Our top story tonight, former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz has withdrawn as President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Attorney General. Gaetz wrote on social media that his nomination, quote, was unfairly becoming a distraction. Let's check in now with Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales with reaction. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, news of Matt Gaetz's withdrawal sent shockwaves throughout the halls of Congress, almost as loud as when he was nominated. Now, his decision comes after new allegations surfaced from the Ethics Committee where a 17-year-old claimed that she had two sexual encounters with Gaetz at a party in 2017, one of which involved an adult woman. Senators on the Judiciary Committee who would have been part of the confirmation process were quick to react.
I hope the president-elect will now consider nominating someone for attorney general who by character, experience, and qualifications can fulfill that role and be confirmed.
The president nominated somebody. They chose to not go forward. Now he'll nominate somebody else. You know, all this interest about Republican nominees, I understand it, but where were most of y'all at when the Democrats were doing this? You know, there was an allegation of rape by a woman against President Biden.
President-elect Donald Trump issued a statement, quote, I greatly appreciate the recent efforts of Matt Gaetz in seeking approval to be attorney general. He was doing very well, but at the same time did not want to be a distraction for the administration for which he has much respect. Gaetz also released a statement on social media saying, quote, there is no time to waste on a needlessly protracted Washington scuffle. Thus, I will be withdrawing my name from consideration to serve as Attorney General. Just last night, Republicans on the House Ethics Committee blocked the release of a report on Gaetz, a report that contains sexual misconduct allegations against the former congressman, evidence of Venmo payments of thousands of dollars to underage girls, allegedly for sex, as well as allegations of illegal drug use. Gaetz denied all the claims. Lawmakers say that's why there is a confirmation process.
It was the right move. Every one of these candidates need to be vetted.
Remember, for all these guys, there's a process. It's the advise and consent process, and we're going to go through that.
Congressman Sean Casten, a Democrat from Illinois, introduced a motion requiring the House to vote to force the Ethics Committee to release the Gaetz report. But that vote was put off till after the Thanksgiving break. At that time, the committee plans to meet again as well. But now that Gaetz pulled his nomination, it's unclear at this moment if that report will ever see the light of day. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Eric. And we are joined now by Republican strategist Brittany Martinez. Brittany, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. So how significant is this withdrawal? And were you at all surprised?
I'm not at all surprised. Thank you for having me, first of all. I'm not surprised. We've seen members of both the House and the Senate who have very well articulated their points that Gaetz was not a very qualified candidate, and I'm glad to see that withdrawal today. He doesn't have the chops to be the highest prosecutor in the land. He was a lawyer for very few years, and not to mention all of the things in his background that are quite controversial, innocent until proven guilty, but you can't help but deny that those payments on Venmo, all of those things are very strange.
Brittany, there was a lot of talk that he likely would not have made it through the confirmation process. Do you think there's any truth to that? And if so, could that have also been a factor?
I think he would have had a really troubling time getting through the confirmation process. There have been plenty of Republican senators who had already indicated that they wouldn't have been supporting him. So, yes, I do think that was absolutely part of it. And Trump didn't want to have that loss. Is Gates withdrawing on his own still a loss? Yes. But is Gates going to the Senate and being like failing that nomination even a greater loss? Yes. So I think that was the right move for him to withdraw.
Yeah. I'm wondering, could this also be a sign that maybe Trump is facing some resistance for his cabinet picks from members of his own party?
I think so, absolutely. In my opinion, this is the second loss of the Trump admin already, and they haven't even been sworn into office yet. We saw that last week with Senator Thune. We saw the MAGA activists on Twitter saying Rick Scott's got to be the guy. Rick Scott was also wholly unqualified to be the Senate Majority Leader. So now that we've seen this with Matt Gaetz, I think that's two losses that he already has before his first day in office.
What do you think happens to Gaetz from here? Where does he go?
Well, he resigned for the rest of this Congress. I think there's up for the debate what that means for this next upcoming cycle, if he'd be able to retain his seat since he did win. And I think he stays as an advisor to the president. He was one for the debate against Vice President Harris. I think that perhaps he just brings him into the fold in that way.
All right. We're going to leave right there. Brittany, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
While there are also new developments regarding President-elect Trump's pick for Secretary of Defense, an investigative report made public says a woman told police that she was sexually assaulted in 2017 by Pete Hegseth. Hegseth told police at the time that the encounter was consensual and denied any wrongdoing. His lawyer says the police report confirms that the allegations were found to be false and no charges were filed. The 22-page report was made in response to a public records request. Meanwhile, the President-elect's pick for Secretary of Education is dealing with a civil lawsuit. The suit alleges that Linda McMahon enabled the sexual exploitation of children by a World Wrestling Entertainment employee as early as the 1980s. McMahon, the former CEO of the WWE, denies the allegations. The suit was filed in October in Baltimore County, Maryland, on behalf of five John Does who say they suffered mental and emotional abuse during their time at the WWE. Well, the Biden administration is responding to two major international issues, one in the Middle East, where multiple arrest warrants have been issued, the other in Ukraine, where once again the war has intensified. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
We'll start with the war in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin says Russia tested a new intermediate-range missile in an attack on Ukraine. And it came in response to Ukrainian strikes on Russia with U.S. and British missiles earlier this week. According to Ukraine's Air Force, an intercontinental ballistic missile was fired at Dnipro, along with eight other missiles, and the Ukrainian military shot down six of them. Two people wounded, an industrial facility, and a rehabilitation center for people with disabilities damaged. Ukraine's president spoke from an undisclosed location.
Today, our crazy neighbor has once again shown who he really is and how he despises dignity, freedom, and human life in general, and how afraid he is. He is also so afraid that he is already using new missiles.
Vladimir Putin warning it could use the weapon against countries that have allowed Kyiv to use their missiles to strike Russia. At the White House, this response to the ratcheting up of tensions.
It presents a significant escalation of its war. Again, they are the ones, they, meaning Russia, are the ones that are escalating this war. And so we are not going to be deterred here.
Meanwhile, in another global development, the Biden administration reacts to the International Criminal Court issuing arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his former defense minister. Warrants also issued for Hamas officials, accusing them all of war crimes and crimes against humanity in connection with a 13-month war in Gaza.
We fundamentally reject the court's decision to issue arrest warrants for senior Israel officials. We remain deeply concerned by the prosecutor's rush to seek arrest warrants and the troubling process errors that led to this decision.
Benjamin Netanyahu condemned the arrest warrant against him, saying Israel, quote, rejects with disgust the absurd and false actions. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more so to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including the hits keep coming, why the Department of Justice is targeting internet giant Google, an analysis of the incoming Trump administration's efforts to massively cut government spending. U.S. U.S. regulators want a federal judge to break up Google. This comes after a court ruling found that over the past decade, the internet giant maintained a monopoly over the competition. The proposed breakup calls for the sale of the Google Chrome browser. Justice Department lawyers say the move would permanently stop Google's control of the search access point. Google is responding, saying the DOJ is pursuing a, quote, radical agenda that would harm Americans. Our President Joe Biden upsets pro-life groups by giving the Medal of Freedom to a former president of Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider. The White House released a photo showing Biden giving the award to Cecile Richards, pro-life group Concerned Women for America writes, giving this high honor to a woman whose entire career has been about destroying human life is truly disgraceful. While speaking of Planned Parenthood, the plans for the proposed Department of Government Efficiency, also known as DOGE, are becoming a little more firm. And it includes language about the nation's largest abortion provider. DOGE aims to drastically cut federal spending. In an op-ed Wednesday in the Wall Street Journal, the co-heads of DOGE, billionaires Elon Musk and former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, said in part, quote, we are focused on delivering cost savings for taxpayers. Skeptics question how much federal spending DOGE contained through executive action alone. DOGE will help end federal overspending by taking aim at the $500 billion-plus dollars in annual federal expenditures, including nearly $300 million to progressive groups like Planned Parenthood. After more, let's go to Mene Ukaburua, editorial page writer for The Wall Street Journal. Mene, great to be with you as always. I want to talk about DOGE's plans for Planned Parenthood, but first I want to talk about DOGE specifically. Cutting government spending and waste isn't, of course, a new concept, and other administrations, Republican and Democrat, also made pledges to do so, including Reagan and Obama. So what makes DOGE so different?
Well, DOGE is different for a few reasons from some of the other so-called blue ribbon commissions that we've had with the goal of trying to cut government spending. It's focusing on the money that's directly within the president's control. So with regard to a lot of those social programs, these are grants that have been given to executive agencies to be able to dole out to different groups at their discretion. As Ramaswamy and Musk mentioned in that op-ed, that's about $300 million there. And the president does have the authority to be able to delay or curtail that funding without having to get congressional authorization. And other areas they're looking to reduce are by cutting the federal workforce, so reducing the number of paid employees, and getting rid of some of the regulations that employees are implementing, both of which would also reduce the amount of wasteful spending in the government.
Yeah, and I know the aim is really to cut trillions in spending. Do you think that's possible? And could they face any obstacles in trying to make those cuts?
Well, the trillion number is one that they both floated at the very beginning of the commission, and they seem to have admitted that that is probably overly optimistic. And that, again, is because most of the spending, A, comes from entitlements like Social Security and Medicare, which are mandatory, but then also discretionary spending that's been approved by Congress that they wouldn't have the authority to revise. And so about $500 billion, I think, is their new target, and we'll see how close they can get.
Yeah, and I want to talk now about DOGE taking aim at Planned Parenthood. As we mentioned, you know, there's specific plans there. Could limiting or ending the government money that Planned Parenthood receives, do you think that could actually happen?
Yes, I think it's important to point out that Planned Parenthood receives federal funding from a variety of avenues, and some of those are more difficult to get at than others. So the type that they're describing approaching through DOGE comes from grants from organizations like the Department of Health and Human Services, which does have a presidential authority behind it. And so they should be able to curtail that. But there are other grants that Planned Parenthood is able to apply for that do have congressionally appropriated funds, and those will be more difficult. So we'll see the plan that they put together and how much funding they're able to claw back.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. Mene, are there any other you know, areas that DOGE will be targeting that would be of interest to the faithful?
That's an interesting question, because a lot of these progressive groups are not necessarily directly committed explicitly to abortion the way that Planned Parenthood is, but they do a lot of advocacy And things of that kind. And so I think that they're going to be reviewing a lot of these non-governmental organizations, advocacy groups, and seeing whether any of them are committed to causes that they think are hostile to the interests of the American people. And they'll be including that in their metrics for deciding how they're going to approach curtailing some of this spending.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens there. Before I let you go, as you know, Argentina's president recently implemented sweeping changes, cutting government spending, I guess, by about 30% in his first 10 months in office. And the move reportedly helped to bring down inflation from more than 25% to less than around 3%. That said, there are also some problems, too. It also sparked some civil unrest and protest. Do you think by doing this or trying to implement this here in the United States, do you think there could be an issue?
Well, I think that the reforms that Doge is proposing are very different from the kinds that we've seen in Argentina so far. It mostly has to do with the size of American government and the regulatory state. So most of the opposition we'll see from it and already see is going to come from federal workers and also from some of these progressive groups that are beneficiaries of the spending. But it's not the same as cutting benefits to unions or some of these other broader forms of government spending of the kind that's going on in Argentina.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to see what happens. Manny, great to be with you as always. Thank you for your insights.
Thanks, Tracy.
China's foreign ministry says that Catholic pro-democracy advocate Jimmy Lai is, quote, an agent and pawn of anti-China forces.
Li Zhiying is the 反中乱港事件的主要策划者.
Beijing says the case against Lai is, quote, lawful and legitimate. During his trial testimony, Lai denied allegations that he asked U.S. officials to take action against Hong Kong and China during anti-government protests back in 2019. If convicted, the former media mogul faces life in prison. All right, now to Pakistan, where 38 people are dead and 20 others wounded. Police say a gunman opened fire on vehicles carrying members of the minority Shiite community.
38 लोग शहीद हो चुके हैं तो डेफिनेटली उनको कहीं ना कहीं पे कोई हेल्प चाहिए होती है.
The interior minister says the strike is a terror attack, and the prime minister says those responsible will be punished. This is the latest flare-up of violence between the majority and minority Muslim groups. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a movie that might just grab a hold of you. Learn more about a faith-based film that features high school wrestling, plus analysis of a new art exhibit about our Lord and why it is causing controversy. Movie to watch with family this Thanksgiving, or really anytime, keep an eye out for Grace by Night. The film tells the story of a man who experiences a personal tragedy and questions his faith, and then he volunteers as a crisis hotline responder, which leads him into the world of high school wrestling.
Without sleep in 36 hours, believing in hope seems a fantasy. Dreaming dues by insomnia. But I don't have the grace to live this life alone. And lately, I find myself reaching for something. Anything.
Well, the film is available now on various on-demand platforms and will be available on EWTN's on-demand app in early 2025. And joining us now is the director and producer of Grace by Night, Nathan Leon. Nathan, good to be with you. So tell us a little bit more about the movie and what was the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, it's really a movie about redemptive suffering. I know Mother Angelica was, you know, heavy into that. She always preached about that. So it's a film that's about finding hope in our darkest moments, and not giving up on God. He never gives up on us. And it's a film about showing how we need to get outside the church walls and go to the least of us, right? So we're all broken. God can use us even when we're broken. There's no place in our life where he can't use us. And that's what the film's really about, a guy who's suffering, having a lot of issues, and then how he finds God and finds hope through getting back into the church.
Yeah, certainly relatable for a lot of people. What specific messages do you hope that your movie will convey about the faith?
Yeah, I think, that there are good Catholic mentors out there. A lot of, media these days, we see kind of the priests can be portrayed as villains. So we have a mentor character who's a priest, and knowing that there is help out there. You know, it's a movie about mental health, and Some of us are suffering quietly, and we can't be afraid to take our problems to people who can help us, specifically priests, and, you know, going back to church, not to be afraid of doing that.
Yeah. What's been the response to the movie, and what have you heard from folks?
It's been very strong. We've been blessed. We have 4 Best Picture awards and a couple Lead Actor and Director awards. So it's been widely accepted from the secular audience as well as Christian audience. And we hope it continues to do that because we really want to evangelize with the film.
That's wonderful. Have you, you know, has anyone shared with you any personal stories of maybe finding hope after watching the movie or inspiration?
Yeah, actually, someone on set who had left the church, the film, working on it. He was playing the priest in the movie. He said that it brought him back to the church, and he hadn't, you know, prayed or anything for about 10 years or so. And so it really, the script and the story really impacted him and showed him that there was another way that he could go. So
that's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us, and thank you for being here. Congratulations on the film.
Thank you so much. I hope everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, absolutely. God bless. Well, a new art exhibit is making headlines across the globe after a church put an artificial intelligence version of Jesus Christ in a confessional. The installation, titled Deus in Machina, is on exhibit at St. Peter's Chapel in Lucerne, Switzerland. People can interact with a hologram version of Jesus and receive spiritual advice and encouragement. And joining us now to talk more about this is Christoph Wimmer, the EWTN News editor for Europe and Asia. Christoph, always good to be with you, my friend. This story is really making a lot of headlines across the world. Many reporting that AI Jesus is hearing confessions, but the technology is not actually involved in the sacrament of penance, is it?
That's right, Tracy. Great to be here, just even to clarify that, right? So that AI Jesus project, it's in St. Peter's Church in Lucerne in Switzerland, is not administering the sacrament of reconciliation in any way. It's an art installation. It's part of an exhibit designed to provoke thought, discussion about the role of technology in our lives, including, of course, the spiritual life. But it's not the sacrament, which is deeply human. It's sacramental. You know, we need a priest acting in the person of Christ and no machine, no matter how sophisticated or cool can take on that role, even in a confessional, which is probably where that confusion came from.
Yeah, what's been the response among people who've maybe been to the art exhibit? What have they been saying?
Reactions, as you know, I'm sure everyone expects, have been really mixed. Some people get pretty excited about it or think it's thought-provoking or spiritually affirming even, because a machine can deliver advice rooted in scripture. One visitor reportedly said, you know, it's a machine, but it gives me so much advice. I guess that says a lot about how open people are to these new experiences. But on the other hand, I mean, there are many criticisms. Many think that AI responses lack depth, lack compassion, lack nuance of human pastoral care. Frankly, a lot of people, including myself, have dismissed it as a bit of a gimmick. You know, they're saying, yeah, it's an interesting experiment maybe, but it lacks richness of human interaction and, above all, sacramental grace.
Yeah, definitely. It certainly got a lot of people talking, although that being said, have there been any concerns, you know, about this exhibit, potential problems that could arise?
You know, it's easy to dismiss it as a novelty, Tracy, but you hit the nail on the head with that one. It is, of course, a legitimate concern and something we can't just brush aside, that this type of project can blur the lines for people because they might not fully understand the sacramental nature of confession. You know, no machine, no matter how advanced your chatbot might be, can offer absolution. It's not just theology. I mean, we're talking sacramental reality of our faith. And then there's the ethical side of it. Can an AI really handle the complexities of theological concepts? And what happens when you open up your heart is not cor ad cor, it's cor ad machina that we're talking about here. Does that really address the depth of our experience, our spiritual struggle? And is there really empathy in play, or can you be fooled? Not to mention the broader risk, of course, for a society that starts talking to chatbots in that way. I've been down that rabbit hole, even just researching for stories we're doing, Tracy, on maybe Thomas Aquinas. And you end up talking about spiritual things that are deeply personal to a machine. So it is risky. And I personally, I'm a bit concerned about it, as much as I enjoy the novelty nature of it. And maybe the headlines are good. And that allegedly is what the artist also wants, a conversation about what machines are bringing. And for the church, for us Catholics, it's really something to navigate.
Absolutely. Christoph, thank you so much. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you, Tracy. God bless.
Our final tonight, Pope Francis calls for a profound renewal in the study of church history, with one church leader saying the message is also a warning against wasting our energy on things that aren't important.
Il Santo Padre, con questo
ultimo... The Holy Father, with this latest letter, continues to encourage and guide priestly formation, specifically, and human and Christian formation more broadly. He calls for a fuller personal and historical awareness of the reality in which we live and work, and invites us to correct and avoid an overly angelicized perspective of our lives and the history we live in.
Father is asking seminarians, clergy, and lay people to embrace the Church's long history, adding that it should go beyond memorizing dates and events and instead lead us to a more clear understanding of the faith and the world today. Well, we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.